You're listening to The Maastricht Diplomat.
Hi, welcome to the third and last episode of this podcast series called 1 Month Abroad, presented to you by The Maastricht Diplomat. This series is all about intercultural experiences, homesickness, language barriers, or anything else you can imagine could happen when you live abroad for a while. Now, in this final episode, I'm going to have with me two guest speakers. This time it is Anthy, who went to Colombia.
Hi.
And Sophia.
Hi.
We already heard from Sophia in the first episode where she discussed her experience in Uruguay. But since we have the representation of not one but two South American countries among our five guest speakers, I want to compare our guest experiences in Uruguay and Colombia for the last episode. So thank you, Anthy and Sophia, for being here. And to you, dear listeners, thank you for tuning in today. I hope you will enjoy this last episode of our podcast series, 1 Month Abroad. So can you just briefly present yourself, your name, where you went on a field study, and also what the research was about?
Sure. My name is Anthy. I was in Bogota, Colombia, and we did a project on the informal economy and social entrepreneurship, and we did it in conjunction with the university there, Rosario.
And I'm Sophia. You've already heard about my project, hopefully, if you listened to the first episode. But I went to Uruguay, to Montevideo, for a month, and we focused on food insecurity and human rights there.
Mm-hmm. So we already know from the first episode that Sophia has not yet been to Uruguay before her field study. How was it for you? Did you go to South America beforehand? Have you been to Colombia already before the field study?
No, I had never been in South America at all.
Okay. And how were then the first days like? I guess you're from the United States and you live here in the Netherlands. How was it different in the first week?
I think because I have traveled and lived abroad, like in my years in Maastricht, that it wasn't such a huge shock in the beginning. But South America is super different than Netherlands, for example. I think I'm kind of accustomed to traveling and living abroad at this point, but it was more getting used to just the city and the vibe in general. Also, it was kind of a unique experience. And I think, like, for example, we stayed in a hotel, so maybe we kind of had some comforts. And also we were there with a large group, so we were all there together going through the same thing. We kind of relied on each other. So even though the first week was maybe difficult with the jet lag and being in this new huge city and everything was so different, we had each other, we had the university there. That treated us super well. We had a supervisor with us, so it wasn't like we were kind of just thrust into it by ourselves. If I had gone alone to Bogota for a month, it would have been super different in my own accommodation, but yeah.
How many people were you again?
I think in total we were 19.
Wow.
Yeah. What about you guys?
We were 10.
10.
Me yeah. included.
And then how did the settling in go? Like, what kind of things did you do, especially as a big group? Like, did you go to places together immediately, or did you split up and like kind of everyone for themselves just settled in?
I think before we went to Colombia, we had already kind of formed some friendships with the group. We tried to bond before we go. I don't know, did you guys do that as well?
Yeah, we also did that.
Yeah, so we had some team bonding activities and also just getting to know each other in general from class and everything. So I think people kind of had their little groups and you did things with those groups, but in general, we did do a lot of things with the university there. I remember like one of the first days we got there, probably the first day, they had a huge welcome breakfast for us.
Oh.
And they gave us empanadas and hot chocolate, and they told us all about the city and things to do and things to see. And we had like even a coordinator that was a student coordinator to help us learn how to kind of navigate the city and give us advice. So I think, of course, we did stuff in like smaller groups, but a lot of the times we were all together. Yeah, and in big groups we did go to some museums, for example. But, you know, if someone wanted to stay back at the hotel, that was also fine. How did you guys do it?
Same for us, actually. Yeah, we also had like a welcome. It wasn't a welcoming breakfast, but a welcoming lunch where we like also got food together with the entire team of the university that we were working with. That was also super cute. And we got like pan de queso for the first time there. I don't know if that's also a thing in Colombia, but it's basically like a scone.
I think there's something similar.
Yeah.
What is it exactly?
It's a scone that's like in the form of a scone, sort of round and like a dollar, but you know, 3D, so bigger. And it's savory, so not sweetened, made with a lot of cheese. And we had that a lot because they served it like in all the breaks with coffee. You just had it every now and then, and due to the leche all the time. And
the university gave you snacks as well.
Yeah, us too. They were really feeding us, actually. It was beyond snack level. It was really constant food. Like, there was not always meals, of course. It was really meant as a snack. We ate it all the time.
Yeah, it sounds amazing. Yeah. I mean, then you have really been well cared for, I think. And how was the city like when you went through it first?
I think in the beginning, we kind of stayed in the central downtown area where the university was, because our accommodation was really close to the university. And also, yeah, we were just kind of getting to know the city in general. So the downtown area that we were staying in, we were staying in La Candelaria, and it's basically the touristy area of the city where all the museums are, also just like some historical sites. And the university was there, so we didn't really leave in the beginning. But then once we got more like affiliated, I guess, with the city and learned how to take Ubers around, we didn't take any public transport, actually.
No.
Did you guys?
We did, yeah. Like, yeah. It also took us a while, though, to get accustomed to that. In the beginning, we only walked because that felt like easiest. But then we ended up taking public buses. Mm-hmm. They were not always reliable, but we found our way once we went in the complete wrong direction and needed to wait to get back. But like, one of the funniest, most precious / special experiences that I've had were actually on the bus. Really? Because there's like street vendors also sell stuff on buses, and there's like musicians on buses as well. So while the bus, like the bus is shaking, it's going up and down, left, right, you like thrown around basically. And then people get on the bus, it's like some vendors selling some candy, and they like greet the bus driver, and it's like fully socially accepted. And they get on, and then they start yelling around, like they're a little, like it's kind of a, like almost a, like a, an artist singing around, because they have like their slogan that they yell, oh, this and that candy in that size and that. Like, that is one thing that is happening. And then there's also just musicians, like whole bands, like five grown-ass men with like the instruments jamming in that bus and then wanting money when they like leave, and they greet the bus driver when they enter and then when they leave again, and it's fully like normalized. Mm. And that was so flashing to me, because in a bus in the Netherlands, that would never happen. Like, imagine someone trying to sell something on the bus to you. You'd be like, nah, like,
no.
I think it's pretty similar in Colombia as well, but I don't know, because we didn't take it at all. But I think actually the Transmilenio, the mm-hmm. bus system in Bogota, it's internationally like lauded. It's a very cool bus system and like very efficient, yeah, as well. But and they're also building a metro now. But for safety reasons, the university recommended us that we don't use the public transport. But no, I think it has a similar thing with the informal vendors. But also, we were doing the informal vendors mostly on the street in the historic districts. So you noticed a lot of informal economy as well in Uruguay? Or?
To be honest, I didn't like look out for it as much, because it was not the topic, and like as much as you did, right, I imagine. Yeah. But it was definitely bigger than here. But I don't know if it's comparable to what you experienced.
Yeah, it's 60% of the economy there.
Wow, that's high. Yeah.
And I mean, Sophia, you also went to a little weekend trip to Buenos Aires. Is that something that's also bigger than Montevideo? Do you think that's like more similar to what Anthea's described?
I have no idea if it's more similar to that, but it was definitely super different to Montevideo, so, because it was bigger, but also more international and more, I guess, tailored to a touristic experience, because it is more like a tourist attraction, has more interest for tourists to go there, or like foreigners, because it was also like a migration hotspot from the beginning. So it was you see just more of a fusion of cultures there. So that I guess also makes it very welcoming or interesting for someone to see who is from farther away. To be honest, I wasn't there long enough to see if there was as much informal economy, or like if that was a trend there. But I did see that there's a lot of like artist potential. Like the city itself has a lot of history with artists redesigning entire quarters. We went to that one area called La Boca, and there was like the specific artist, I forgot the name, kind of donated most of his money that he earned over the time to kind of redecorate and remodel this quarter of the city. So now everything is painted super colorfully. Probably if you've Googled Buenos Aires, this is what comes up. These are the houses, like
colorful.
Yeah, the super like colorful doors and whatever. It actually looks like that is really pretty, but it's also like the number one tourist attraction. So there's hundreds of people there. But that also shows like how ingrained kind of artists are, because now there's still artists there selling, I don't know what, paintings of the tourists who come by. So it is kind of tailored to the touristic experience. But then again, it's also still art that is produced. So that is more something that I noticed. Mm. But there's probably so much more to say about Buenos Aires. I'd love to go back. Yeah. Like, I was really fascinated by that.
How many days were you there?
From Thursday to Sunday.
Okay.
So not really that long. And although the journey itself is like, you can take the ferry, which we did, which is only, mm-hmm. I think, 3.5 or 4 hours, like mm-hmm. the actual travel time. But because of immigration, it takes a lot, like a while. Wow, because okay. Argentina is so much cheaper that the ferry tickets mm-hmm. are almost sold out constantly. So it was a hassle getting those tickets. Like, that was also number one, like, super complex experience of getting these tickets, because we wanted to go with the 10 of us, and it was somehow not possible to order them online because you couldn't pay with like foreign bank accounts. So we had to get the money out like in pesos, like out of the machine, and then pay at like a transaction office, and then for us to pay the tickets. It was super complicated. But that was because a lot of people just go to Argentina to buy like everyday products, because Uruguay is super expensive and mm-hmm. Argentina is super cheap. So people go with their cars on the ferry, or like to drive the land road, which is a bit longer, and just to shop. Mm-hmm. So because of that, there's a lot of like kind of human traffic, and then you need to wait.
So it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. It's super cool that you could take a ferry.
Yeah.
We also did a weekend trip, but we had to fly because of, I think, Colombia's typography. They don't really have good national roads or mm-hmm. like train systems. So yeah, but that's super cool that you can take a ferry from Montevideo to Buenos Aires.
So. Yeah, we actually didn't end up getting the direct ferry because there is also one, but that one we couldn't get. So we needed to go by bus to like another town from there, to Colonia from there we went to. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we also had some issues with our foreign cards sometimes, working on certain websites that weren't really tailored to tourists, you know.
And the interesting thing is that I realized is that, like, for me, it's super normal. Like, when I want to go somewhere, I book the train or I book the plane online, and I just give everything in, and I'm 100% certain that this is not a scam, like, mm-hmm. that this plane actually exists. But then we landed on, like, boat sites that, like, we've read some reviews, and then it said, oh, this company doesn't actually give you the tickets. Like, it never gives it to you, and it just lets you pay. So there's so many, like, it's a different infrastructure of traveling, because for me, that's so normal that I just click, 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 and pay, and then I'm there. But like, we went to this realization of, oh, okay, this is like a super privileged position of us to assume that it all just works. And we just figured, okay, you need to go there in person to figure it out, and then it works. And then there's always a way, but like, online is not to the same standard that I'm used to.
Yeah. And you talked before about like kind of the multicultural aspect of Buenos Aires. Is that something that you also witnessed in Bogota? Or is it like a bit more the Colombians that are living there?
You know, I think Bogota does have tourism. Of course it does. But I think a lot of the tourism in Colombia is concentrated in the coast, in like Cartagena. We went to Santa Marta and also Medellin, I think. Of course there's a lot of tourists in Bogota, but a lot of locals too. And I don't think Bogota is the biggest destination for tourists to go to in Colombia, mainly because of the climate, I think. Because it's in the mountains, so it's not a tropical climate. Mm-hmm. Or at least it doesn't feel like it is, because of the mountain, like its altitude. It's kind of colder than the rest of the country.
Okay.
How cold? Of course, I don't know in Celsius, only in degrees, around like 65, 70 degrees. So maybe like only a bit warmer than today here. I don't know what that is. But I'm still not used to Celsius.
Okay, today it has 11 degrees, like Celsius.
Yeah. So warmer than today, but sometimes it also rains a lot. We were there during the rainy season. But no, of course, there's a lot of museums, a lot of art, a lot of street art also in Bogota, also a lot of historical sites. So there are a lot of tourists. But walking around, sometimes we were the only like white people you can see sometimes, you know? So it's not, I think, as common as maybe Buenos Aires to travel there. Maybe also the season that we went to. But it is multicultural, I would say. There's a lot of people that living and working in Bogota from different countries, and also from neighboring countries, for example, from Venezuela. Mm-hmm. A lot of migrants, because of the economic crisis and political instability there, also going to Colombia for that. Maybe even in transit to other countries. But yes, I would say it's multicultural for sure, especially in certain neighborhoods. Maybe also the neighborhoods that we were in, because we kind of stayed in the more affluent or touristy neighborhoods. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say is what makes the Bogota, like what is the essence of it? I think for Buenos Aires, you said like the art was really something that's captured you.
Or the energy.
Yeah.
It's just, it has a certain energy that's super difficult to describe. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
How is it for you then in Bogota?
I wouldn't know how to describe the overall vibe of Bogota. I think it's a really interesting city. I think it's amazing. I really had a great time, but I wouldn't say there's this one thing that's super characteristic of Bogota. Mm. It's just a really big city that has a lot of different kind of quirks to it. It's like, yeah, in the mountains, so there's some nature around. There's also some very historical sites, I would say maybe it's pretty different than the rest of Colombia. I don't know, because I haven't traveled that much in Colombia. We only went to one weekend. But just from what I understand, I think it's pretty different than the rest of Colombia, just because it is the capital city. It is maybe a bit more affluent than the rest of Colombia. Mm-hmm. I think there was a big difference with Santa Marta, which was obviously a smaller city that we visited, in terms of like wealth, versus Bogota. And I think also, all the political centers are in Bogota, and it's just more of like I think it's different than the rest of Colombia, but again, I could be wrong because I've never traveled that much throughout Colombia. But I think things that really stuck out to me were the warmth of the people, also to foreigners. The city is beautiful, absolutely beautiful, and I really wouldn't know how to describe the overall vibe. You know, I think there's a lot of street art as well. The food is very typical, like Colombian. I don't know if there's a specific vibe, though. I think it's its own thing, because it's this huge city that's really spread out, and there's a lot of different, I think, neighborhoods. I think each neighborhood maybe has its own vibe as well. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of inequality as well. Like, you can kind of see that. I think, you know, the places that we were in Bogota were either like the touristy areas or then the rich north areas, versus we didn't really go into the south, where it was more considered dangerous or in poverty. So it's kind of hard to say the overall vibe, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. For Montevideo as well, there's like really like every section of the city has its own vibe. I fully get what you mean, because there's like one area that has more like posh or more expensive restaurants, and then that is a completely, like, what was called Positos, like that was a completely different vibe. And then you'd even hear, like, in the conversations that we've had with the students, they were like, oh, I live there and there, and I live there and there. So you really get a feeling of where they're from in a way, and like what their daily life looks like, because you don't, because the distances are so huge, you don't really cross from from one area to the other if you don't really have to. Like, it also took us a while, I don't know how it was for you, to actually like move away from where
we were in the
resituated city. Because it takes, in a way, some like mental effort to go somewhere like an hour in one direction, but it's still in the same city. But
I think we traveled around quite a bit, honestly, because we also did Ubers, and I think that I think that also helped us move around the city a bit. The Ubers were super cheap.
Yeah, and that was the only thing that was cheap for us too.
We really saw a lot of this, a good portion of the city, except, you know, some neighborhoods that we weren't really supposed to go to. But I think I thought about it a little more, and I think something that was very characteristic was, yeah, the informal economy in general, like the street markets, the street fairs. They had so many things like this. Even in more posh neighborhoods, they still had kind of like a street market, an art market, artesanos, like people making crafts. And I think that's something that's very characteristic of Bogota, this informal economy aspect, food in the streets, fruits in the streets, art in the streets. Yeah. Like, I think that was very characteristic. Mm-hmm. I would say maybe that's the thing that stuck out to me. That was maybe also because I did the project on it and I noticed it more. But in general, you can't walk outside without there being there. Like, right by our hotel, for example, there was a huge La Séptima. It's like a street that just was filled and filled for blocks and blocks and blocks with just people selling things, you know.
We had the same, actually, but for what was so interesting is that people only came out when it was nice outside. So for the first like 1.5 weeks it was really gray, so then you wouldn't see anyone. Okay. So it was really like be a different picture. Was it the same for you guys as well? Like that,
I think
people only sold stuff when it was sunny.
I don't think so. I think they sold different products when it was sunny.
Okay.
When then they started coming out with umbrellas. They really adapt, because I mean, they have to, because Bogota has a really, I think, unstable climate, and a lot of people actually that we talked to in our interviews said that they kind of had to adapt. For example, with COVID, they started selling face masks, and they still sold stuff in the streets. They had to. It's their livelihood. You know, a lot of people are working in this sector. And for example, when it rains, you can see that maybe a lot of the vendors have canopies and they put things away and they're not out anymore, but then you'll see other vendors coming with umbrellas, you know. So they really have to adapt to the weather, I think, especially. And when it's so, like, it could be beautiful and sunny 1 hour and then the next hour kind of raining, like Netherlands, honestly. But yeah, I think people really have to adapt. So it's not like they wouldn't be out on the streets anymore. You really have to be prepared for a flood. Maybe also the rainy season that we went into also affects that. But
I can imagine, because if the street is flooded, you can hardly...
Yeah, of course. But that wasn't typical. Maybe it was also like the first week we were there. But I think the weather got better also. Yeah.
Did you also experience any culture shocks while you were there?
Yeah, I think for sure. Something that I like didn't realize was that they actually wake up kind of earlier than we do here, or at least I do here. Yeah, like they might have still like fun on a night out, but then still kind of get up early. Like classes, for example, started really early for us, and we were always complaining. Even like 8, 9 a.m., we were always complaining. Because here in Matrick, maybe you have an 8:30 tutorial, but then you might also have a 1:30 tutorial or 4. We kind of ended our days like pretty soon in the day. And I think that was kind of different than I expected it to be, because there was also a lot of going out there, a lot of fun that we had, maybe also as tourists. But I would assume like in the Colombian culture, like from the people there and what we met, like they like to have fun, you know, they're very open and they like to go out. And that's, we also went out a lot. And I think that's something we enjoyed a lot in Bogota, enjoying kind of like the nightlife, but not even like club. I mean, we did go to clubs and things, but also like bars, things like this. But then they still wake up kind of early. I don't know how this really works. Yeah, that was something I noticed.
How was the perception of time? Like, were people like punctual or?
You know what? I think yes.
Yeah.
I think yes. I think we were always kind of the late ones, which was interesting.
That is super interesting, because for us it was the other way around.
Yeah, I think also we were on this month abroad in the university that we weren't really like a part of, and I think we kind of took advantage of that a little bit. We would go out at night and then in the morning kind of be like hungover, tired, and then kind of go late to the class. So maybe it was also our fault. But I think I wouldn't say it was very punctual. But I think we found ourselves to be the late ones sometimes. I don't know, how is it for you guys? Yeah.
No, completely the other way around, because we would be there punctually in the beginning, like ish. And then we'd wait like half an hour to actually start. We'd just sit around. Like, we'd be waiting for that one professor who wasn't there yet, or like that one student who wasn't there. We'd be sitting around chatting, nothing would happen. And then we adapted to that and we started to be late. Okay. Because
we had the opposite.
That was the bad.
Our coordinator actually had to tell us, guys, you have to start going on time. And they had to always send us reminders and texts.
Did you
guys have to wake up early every morning? Or?
Yes. Like, we had to be there at 9, sometimes at 8.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. But do you guys also go out a lot or not as much?
Well, sometimes yes, but not really as much. Because
Not every night. Yeah.
No, because the nightlife wasn't or isn't as... I think not the same as Bogota. Bogota. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, at least for foreigners, it's very, like, it feels sometimes very unsafe.
Okay, really?
Mm. Yeah. So it took us a while to actually get the confidence to, like, in the evening to be out and about.
Interesting, because I would think that Montevideo seems more safe than Bogota.
Yeah. I think we were also just told a lot that it's unsafe. And I think that it took us a long time to kind of break
that. Kind of get that out. Yeah.
We did it the
same thing for us,
but we were really constantly told to be careful and, like, it's dangerous and you're all women. And well, I get that, but at some point, it's also, like, you also need some kind of empowerment of, oh, it's okay. But we went to, like, a couple of tango evenings and tango bars, and that was really fun.
Yeah, one of the first nights we went there, I think it was Halloween, so we were like, okay, we have to go out. And we just went to a random bar, and these guys started dancing with us and showing us, like, typical dances.
Yeah, and we also went to, like, a salsa bar. There was, like, a lot of music, a lot of dances. People know how to dance so well.
Super well, yeah.
Like,
oh, my goodness.
Like, everyone, like, the randomest
I was embarrassed.
Will stand up and, like, do some twirls, and they'll, like, they'll never have seen each other, and they, like, match, and it's wonderful to watch. So that was really cool.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah, but with the safety, maybe that was another culture shock I kind of had. Maybe not culture shock, but I think they kind of prepared us for the worst before we went on these destinations. And because I did not seem as dangerous as I thought it was going to be.
No, I think we were also fine. Well, we did watch out for, like, you know, the unsafe areas. And the first couple of days, like, there was a port relatively close to a hostel. And we were in that area. We knew it wasn't safe. And people started yelling at us. So, like, there were unsafe situations.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, there's the point where you understand why safety is an issue that you need to take seriously. Mm-hmm. But I think you need to find a balance and, like, okay, I know this is unsafe. And I know I need to walk with a second person or something like that. And, like, a balance between that and being completely scared. Because that is also, there's no point in that, because then you actually don't move anywhere and you don't feel secure and just, like, very anxious all the time. So it's just kind of finding security in the, it's insecure.
For us, I think we had different mixed opinions about that, based on who went on this trip. Mm. For example, I didn't feel unsafe at all. But maybe it's also because I'm from New York, a really big city. I'm from the Bronx. Like, it was, you know, Bogota seemed, of course, we avoided some areas. We didn't take Ubers alone. I was most of the time with, like, some guy friends or with a big group in general. So it's not like I was walking around the city alone. And, you know, you have to be careful with pickpockets and things like that, your stuff on you. But I never really felt unsafe, you know, especially, like, I mean, in the areas we were in. But some people, like, on the trip with us, they didn't feel like that. They felt unsafe walking around. And maybe it's also because before we went, we kind of had these different views. And also from they kind of told us to watch out for certain things.
Yeah.
Like, I remember my mom, before I went to Colombia, she was super upset that I chose this destination. Oh. You know? Yeah, because it has a, you know,
the drug,
like, they have a preconceived notions about, like, maybe the drug trade and maybe things, it's not like narcos anymore, you know? But yeah, but for you, you really felt safe in Montevideo.
No, I, like, in the beginning, of course, you're a bit hesitant, also because we're a group of only women, so then that's also a bit because you, like, just gender differences just exist, and it makes a difference if you're walking around with a male person.
For sure.
There's a different kind of dominance there. But generally, like, after I got over that, like, first insecurity of, how do I, like, walk there? How does that work? Like, do I find back everywhere? I actually felt pretty safe, too. Like, it took a moment to kind of adjust and to realize that everything is actually okay. But then it actually worked out, and, like, we went and, like, took the buses, even although that was also in the beginning something
we didn't
that
do that, yeah.
told to avoid, or, like, but it turned out to be fully fine. We were never alone. I was never alone in a bus.
I think it would have been so interesting. I don't think I was ever without, like, a guy friend around me or in a big group of girls. But I think even without a guy friend around me, maybe I would have had a completely different experience.
Because we did experience catcalling and, like, stuff like that, obviously.
We didn't really experience that much at all. Like, the only time I felt unsafe was when we went to Santa Marta, which was, like, the other city on the coast. And we kind of had this harrowing journey from the airport because there was this huge traffic jam because a car... and a truck collided, and actually a lot of people died. It was in the middle of the night. Nobody had service. We were out in the middle of the desert, basically, with no service, no water.
You're scared.
And in two of our friends, three of the girls on the trip, they were in a bus because they had taken a plane before. Nobody had heard from them. We were ready to call the Dutch embassy. You know, one of the girls was already at the Airbnb in Santa Marta, like, waiting because we took a flight to a different city. It was a whole logistical mess, basically. And that was the only time we felt really unsafe, because we were in the car, we were in the taxis, no service. And, you know, that's really the time where people can maybe come and take advantage of you, point a gun at you and rob you, because they know you're, like, helpless in the desert, you know, with nothing and no service. And you're just at the mercy of kind of these taxi drivers and the truckers.
Oh, yeah, that's scary.
And there was no light. And if we weren't with the guys, I would have been very... scared, honestly.
But I mean, the whole safety thing is also one of the aspects that are often, like, as a stereotype about South America, like, oh my god, you shouldn't go there, and, like, it's the one safe and everything. So I was wondering, like, there's so many different stereotypes, I think, about the whole continent. Were there any things where you had, like, as an idea beforehand of South America, and then once you were there, you were actually like, no, this is absolutely not true, like, this is not the stereotype at all?
I'm not sure, like, of course I had stereotypes before, but I think I was very cautious not to have to, like, to believe in them too hard, because we also tried to identify them in a way. Obviously you never achieve that fully, but, like, I think the safety or, like, the safety issue was really one of the things where I thought that would be more challenging or more dangerous. And I think that stems from what you already said earlier, Anthea, of, like, how we were taught about it and how we discussed about it. Because obviously, if you're a group of 10 girls, you take into consideration, okay, how do you deal with, like, any situations of violence? How do you go about that in the group? Who do you talk to? Like, how do you work that out to support each other, but also not to put burden on each other? So we had these very difficult conversations. And I think while that is important, that also shaped how I kind of mentally prepared. But once I was there, it actually kind of fell away at some point, because then I realized, okay, of course, I need to know which areas I should avoid. Like, for us, it was also the north that we didn't really go to on our own, or, like, the parts of the city where you're like, oh, okay, maybe there I don't go at night. But generally, making sure that you have, like, phone battery or a power bank with you was fine and enough to kind of make sure that I can call either a taxi or an Uber, share my location with someone, I have service. And that gave me enough kind of, yeah, like backbone to fall back on and to feel less afraid, and then like move away from that safety is always an issue kind of proposition that I had in my head. Because while it is still something that you need to take into account, and you walk differently in the street than I might do in Maastricht, because here there's like, I don't know, at least I feel super safe here. I don't know about you, but
yeah.
Here I don't really watch out if I hold my phone in the hand or my like,
or I'm walking at night,
yeah, exactly, or my wallet. I hold both things in my hand, and like, it's okay if it's on display, but about these things I'd be more cautious. And like, maybe on the market I'm not parading around my phone and my wallet and like, you know, in plain sight for everyone to see. But if I'm cautious of that, then I think it was fine.
I think these are also things that are true for other cities. Like, it doesn't have
big
to be
cities in exactly. general. So. I wouldn't be walking around New York at 2
I
in
think
the morning.
That's
but
the
here I'll do that in Maastricht, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, for real. I think the biggest thing was safety also for me. Like, it was really not as dangerous as maybe some people made it out to be or what we expected, you know. I think, of course, you cannot be stupid. We all had our location shared. We didn't take public transport because we knew that could make us easy targets for pickpocketing, or we avoided certain areas that the university told us not to go to, or we made sure we were always traveling in groups and not alone, or not alone at night. But in the end, it really wasn't as dangerous as you might think when you hear, like, Colombia, you know.
Yeah, I think that something that one needs to take into consideration, that a big city is always a big city,
yeah,
right? Like, in Brussels, there's now also shootings almost, like, every week.
Yeah.
And this is not far from here. Like, that is, of course, it's not comparable to the Latin American context because it's different and different culture and different continent. But it's also a big city, and big cities always come with some sort of danger, if you want to call it like that. And you maybe need to be more careful because.
I mean, I think I totally agree, and I also see the same thing. But for example, like, one time I went with, I think, just like three, four girls, and we went thrifting in just this one area. We had a really nice time. Then we went to the park. And then we took an Uber back to the hotel, and the driver was like, "What were you doing in this neighborhood? You should not have been there. It's a huge gang, like, violence neighborhood, and the, like, foreigners should not go there." You know? Really, you're just kind of clueless. You think you're, you know, I recognize that the area was a bit like less safe, but I was like, it's fine, you know, like, it didn't seem that nobody said anything to us, or it didn't seem crazy, terrible neighborhood or something like that. You know, I noticed it was a bit not like the center, but, you know, so you really, like,
I think
sometimes you're just clueless. It's just lucky.
Luck is also
lucky.
A part of it.
Yeah, luck is just... And I think, actually, we had no issues with theft. Did you guys have anything in
no,
there?
No, we actually also didn't have anything. Funnily enough, like...
We're the whole time like this with our stuff. And then in the end... But, you know, maybe that also influences it. If you're careful, then it doesn't happen to you.
Exactly.
You know?
I think we were super careful. But on the other hand, I said this in the first episode as well, you could always still see that we're tourists. Like, you cannot mask... Like, you can try in a smaller group, but if you're a group of 10 girls who are walking around, like, in a big group, you're obviously on the spotlight, and then it's very obvious that you also, like,
we look different.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know how it was for you, but like, you know, we had a lot of blonde girls on the trip, or, you know, and they just, they're like a sore thumb here.
Also, the language, like,
the language,
as soon as you start to speak, people are aware, like, that is the
do they speak English well in
okay, I think, like, you'll find people,
but you guys
English.
Mostly communicated in Spanish.
Yeah.
How was it for you? Did you know Spanish before going?
I took Spanish here at the university. I did B1 plus, but I'm not super great. But I tried. I tried. But also, we had Spanish speakers with us on the trip, like native Spanish speakers from Spain. And that really helped, I think, because they were kind of the ones that were in the forefront and talking to people. But at the same time, maybe that made me not practice my Spanish as much as I would have liked to, because I always kind of relied on that crutch of having, like, my friend next to me who spoke Spanish fluently. But I think in general, it's 1 month is not enough time to learn the language as well.
No,
I was kind of expecting, I'm going to be fluent by the end of this month, you know? Not fluent, but of course I was like, I'm really going to, I can't wait for Colombia. I'm going to practice my Spanish. In the end, I don't know if it really improved that much.
But I mean, often it's also nice to just, like, have some knowledge, understand at least the signs and, like, the
menus. No, I understood. I understand everything,
stuff, so.
I think. I would say I understand everything. Also, the Colombian accent is pretty clear. Is it clear in Uruguay?
I actually understood the Argentinian accent better, but...
Okay, really? Interesting. Because I feel like Argentinian is seen as, like, the accent.
Okay. Because people, like, make sh sounds instead of the Y, and so it, like, transforms.
Wait, did you do Spanish here at the university?
Or? I did, and also in high school. So
yeah, I also did a bit of high school.
I was gonna say, because of the, like, theft we talked about, like, funnily enough, nothing happened to us while we were in Buenos Aires, but that was, like, the city that we were warned about for pickpockets especially. But our supervisor, who is from Argentina, went to Buenos Aires, like, the weekend after we had left, because she stayed there, and her phone, like her wallet, got stolen on that weekend.
Really?
So like, this is also just to display how mm-hmm. much of a question of luck it is, yeah. because like, this woman is Argentinian. She's from around the Buenos Aires. Is very aware of everything. Was generally a relatively a person who warned us about being careful all the time. Yeah. And nothing happened to us, and something happened to her. So it kind of shows how lucky you can just be, and how unlucky you can also be. So I,
for us,
would still say you need to be
cautious. We didn't have like any theft thing actually, but one of the girls on the trip, she lost her wallet at a club, and like a really huge club. It was the last night that this club was open before they tore it down for the metro, and she lost her wallet and I think maybe something else. And we thought, okay, for sure it was stolen, because we were warned that our stuff can be stolen at this club.
Yeah.
The next day she calls the club, oh yeah, we have your wallet. And they sent it with, they like, the university helped her get it with like a, like, you know, like Uber Eats,
mm-hmm.
yeah. but just like for the wallet. Yeah, so like, you expect to be something from yours to be stolen. No, they like Uber ate her wallet, you know, like from the club.
Wow,
that's actually yeah. so good.
Like, if you lose something at Complex here in Maastricht, yeah. you're not gonna get it back.
No, they're you know? Yeah. you're not gonna Uber Eat.
Yeah, no. I mean, the university did help her, but yeah, it's really, you that's really think, yeah, we were like, for sure someone stole it, or yeah. no.
I still have a question for you. So, because like, you were perceived a lot as like tourist, mm-hmm. but you were also there as like researcher. Mm-hmm. How do you think would your experience have been different if you have only been there for touristic purposes and not at all as mm-hmm. like a researcher as well?
I think when we were rocking the city, people didn't know we were doing research, mm-hmm. you know, in general. But when we were doing the interviews, we were just walking around, and I think we were perceived a lot as tourists as well, because we were buying their goods, for example. Like, when we did an interview, we made sure to kind of give back and, like, buy something mm-hmm. that the artisan made, or buy fruit or something to kind of give back to the person that we were, like, talking with. Mm-hmm. And, of course, we did tell them that we're doing this project. But in general, I think, I mean, we just looked like tourists, and we're only there for a month, you know? In the end, we were tourists, you know, in some way, you know? We were just there for 1 month. It's not like we really lived there. We were also living in a hotel, you know? Maybe it was a bit different for you guys. I mean, a hostel still.
Yeah.
We were living in a hotel. We kind of had a mini exchange, I would say, mm-hmm. more than a research. I mean, of course, we did some research there, but yeah. But I think for me, something that was different was I would get a lot of different, when I was talking to someone, maybe even someone like our age, or someone maybe a bit older, I think I would get a very different reaction if I said I was, like, or an Uber driver, for example,
mm-hmm.
If I was from America or if I was from Greece. Because I'm Greek-American and I grew up in America. But I think in Colombia, they really have this view of, like, America's gringos. Mm-hmm. And that kind of influenced what I, like, the responses I would get, I would say.
Yeah.
And then I think also, yeah, maybe they just assumed that we all had more money, which was the truth, you know? The mm-hmm. exchange rate was super in our favor. I think you had an opposite, or not an opposite experience, but comparable. Like,
yeah.
we basically were living, like, 1 month in the hotel and buying whatever we wanted, going out to eat all the time, and we didn't really have to, going on Ubers that were $1, you know, or mm-hmm. €1. And I think, yeah, I mean, the stereotype was that we were kind of rich, and I think it was honestly true. We were kind of living, like, a really lavish month, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, I think for us, like, the exchange rate wasn't bad per se, but life is just really expensive in Uruguay, so
yeah,
it's expensive for everyone. It's also expensive for the people there.
Yeah,
so we didn't really have that.
I think I kind of realized that we had a very privileged, I mean, we said it before, I mean, we knew that we were going into this kind of yeah. in a privileged position, but I think we did have a nice, like, research experience, but it was very cushy and privileged, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from, we had the crazy experience with the university. They were really nice to us, and that was great. And but it was one of the oldest universities and richest universities in Colombia, you know? And they really took good care of us. Then we were staying in the hotel, which, because it wasn't that expensive. Then we were just going out to eat. And we made friends with, like, kind of people that were in the richer part of society. And mm-hmm. they were taking us to their houses. And we were partying with, like, Andy Warhol and Botero paintings. And Picasso's on the wall. You know what I mean? So we kind of had this kind of really privileged mm-hmm. experience. I think maybe you guys didn't have as much as that.
No, yeah. we didn't really.
Yeah.
Well, in a way, we're still in a similarly privileged position, because, like, on one of the first days, we did, like, introduction rounds with the Uruguayan students and us.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the questions was to kind of map out to which countries we had been before.
Yeah.
And our group mostly went first, and we kind of all listed, oh, we've been there, and then there was a world map, and it was kind of about how the world map was distorted in different ways, and then we should still point to the kind of country. So it was kind of an icebreaker. And then, like, we all gave our list of different European countries and, like, worldwide places that we had been. And then most of the Uruguayan students were like, well, I've been to Uruguay, Argentina, Brazil, and some had been to Chile, and some had been to the US, but it was really, like, on a hand, usually. So that was really, like, one of the fast moments where we were like, well, like, this is almost uncomfortable, how, different the world awareness is, or, like, the... like, not uncomfortable in a way that I'm putting us on a pedestal, but we've just come from a completely different background, and we're coming in with our perspectives, and, like, the privilege that we've had allowed us to go to all of these different places and get all of these enriching perspectives, and then they need to present, oh, I've been to Argentina. So that was really, like, in a way, a different kind of privilege. Maybe the financial privilege, yes, we also had that, because we were able to come there and, like, go in.
But I think maybe the traveling thing is also based on geography. Because, for example, in Europe, it's super... Or geography or infrastructure. Because, I mean, Brazil is huge. It's like...
Exactly.
And all these countries, I mean, they're just bigger in general. And also, I think the transportation and stuff to move around them is not as, like, well-established as in Europe. I think the same thing for the U.S. Like, I haven't really traveled that much in the U.S. Versus when I moved here to Europe, I've been boom, 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 boom.
So, agreed, though, you know, because you can put
I mean, it is privilege still. I'm not saying it's not privilege, but I think it has a lot to do with geography, not only about monetary means, you know?
That's true, but then, you know, also most of us had different, like, continents on their
list. I think it's also our background as, like, global studies, people that are really interested in traveling, and also, we study at Maastricht University. It's like, we're in a privileged position in general for Europeans, you know? So
no, you're right. It definitely has to do with geography, because most of Europe fits in, like, in Brazil.
Exactly,
in the
exactly. So yes, it's about that as well, but I think, of course, like, we have this... I'm not saying that we're not privileged at all.
No, no, it's something that one needs to acknowledge, but it's also sometimes it's a bit difficult to deal with, because then, like, when you're in that situation, when you're presenting that, you also don't want to lie, you don't want to hide your privilege, but you also don't want to make the other
feel guilt. Yeah. Yeah. Or not guilty.
Or, like, not good.
Now that we were speaking about Brazil, something I had before, what I was thinking of before I planned for this episode was how I, for instance, didn't know pretty much anything about Uruguay before you went on the field study, or, like, in general about, like, some regions or countries in South America. I simply do not know enough, I think. And I feel like oftentimes it gets overshadowed by countries like Colombia or Argentina or Brazil or something, because they're just, like, a lot bigger, they're a lot more known here, in Europe at least. So, yeah, how do you think about that? Do you think that's true? Like, can you just throw all of the South American countries into one pot and, like, say, oh, it's kind of like Brazil, it's kind of like Argentina?
I'd say no.
I've never even heard that being said. You know, you wouldn't say that Poland is the same as
Yeah, you wouldn't say France. That, but I can imagine that people are like, oh, South America. Like,
yeah, it's true. But I think, like, I would not be able to say that, like, Colombia is, like, a lot of the places in South America. I mean, I've only been to that place, so I also don't know that much. But, maybe people do lump it together, like, South America, more than they do, like, Europe, you know?
I think also because of the language, like, they're, like, one cluster.
Except, I guess, Brazil, yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah. But I think, like, from my experience, while there are some kind of overlapping tendencies, or, like, if you look at Argentina and Uruguay, both are claim that they're the origin of tango, for instance, and both countries drink a lot of mate, but there's differences in how the mate is prepared, and, like, there's smaller mate leaves and it gets stuck in the other straw and stuff like that. Like, there are similarities, but I'd still say there's, like, vast differences in culture and approaches and, like, how people understand each other. Even the accents vary. Like, for the European, I think, or for the non-South American, it's always like, oh, everybody speaks Spanish.
Yeah.
And that's that. But as we know,
similar food, similar, like, exactly. I think arepas is, like, a big thing in a lot of different, like,
yeah, we also have,
yeah,
that,
exactly,
yeah.
So yeah, I get that, but I would say it's still super different,
you know? I would also argue that, because in the countries alone that I've now been to, there was always a different accent, like, you can, like, if you take Argentina and Uruguay, they're neighboring, but how people speak is different. The situation that they have to deal with is so completely different. If you look at the governments,
yeah,
completely different scenario. I mean, now everything is a bit changing because of the new elections. We're actually, we just got back on the election day of the new Argentine president. Mm. So we just missed like the crowds and the uproar and everything, thankfully. but with those like different financial situations, you cannot really put them in one boat, I think, because like, if you have to deal with like major financial crises in one country, where everything, where the currency is worth nothing and everything is super cheap, but everybody is super poor, and another country where everything is super expensive, then that is not, like, it cannot be put together in a way.
Yeah, I think even just the histories are so different.
Yeah, well, there's also some similarities, right? Yeah. I'm writing my thesis on, like, this women's movement in Argentina, and it's about, like, how during the dictatorship, basically, a lot of people disappeared, or were disappeared by the government, and there's, like, similar tropes of history in Chile, in Brazil, in Argentina, in Uruguay, in Mexico. Like, there's all these different tendencies of people being disappeared. So although it's different contexts, there are some similarities that tie it together.
Of course, I mean, they're influenced by each other, too, right? They're close by in neighbors. Yeah, but I think Colombia with the drug trafficking, of course that happened other places in South America, I think it's really kind of unique to the country, and it's still left a lot of like trauma, and you still notice it while you're there. Not really in the form of like kind of obvious things, but if you just start talking to people, or like the monuments we would visit, and how like it's still kind of, you know, a big part of their history, it's still tied to their culture, how the reconciliation movement was, and the new governments, and still influences politics today. I don't know, I think they're very unique situations. For example, maybe the dictatorship in Argentina. Yeah. I don't know that much about Uruguay, honestly. Like, I know that like it's one of the more sustainable countries. I know that it's more the politically stable. But about its history, I don't know that much, honestly.
Yeah, to be honest, nor did I before I chose the destination. But I think it's also one of the countries that you hear less about, in a way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, one thing that I knew before coming was that it's the Switzerland of South America. Yeah. Like, but also that it had more cattle than people. I also done research, okay, what products does Uruguay produce, and actually it mainly exports cattle and soy, and well, you feed the cattle with the soy, so it goes kind of hand in hand, and also has a big meat industry, but because of that it imports a lot. So these kind of things I then learned in the context of food insecurity, because obviously if you need to import everything, or most goods, not everything, but most things, then that makes it difficult for you to like have goods that are cheap, and then that is how it all enforces itself. But I also needed to really learn about Uruguay. It was great that I had that opportunity.
That experience, it's good that you got to know the more detailed version, I think, than of just like, okay, you have the Switzerland of South America, and then you go there and you really learn like how it is in practice, like with the prices and the industry. Also, like, to go back, like, the kind of the drug thing in Colombia, that's like one of the very common stereotypes, right? So it's very interesting that you mentioned that it is, at the one hand, a stereotype, but on the other hand, it's also like kind of present in everyone's minds at the same time.
Yeah, I think it's not as present as it might have been 20 years ago. And also, I think in 2016, there was the Truth and Reconciliation movement, and but right now, honestly, I didn't notice it that much. But I think when something like that happens to a country, it's always going to leave a mark. And of course, there's still problems with drug trafficking now there too. It's not completely finished, and there's still problems with guerrilla, you know? I mean, of course, not to the extent that it was. Also, it's maybe very like localized in certain regions. But yeah, I definitely think it's not as it might have been 20 years ago in Colombia, I think. It would have been a completely different experience being in Bogota. But people lived through it, right? So it wasn't that long ago. Maybe the new generation doesn't at least see the effects as much. But I think also, I mean, Colombia still has a big drug influence, I think, as well. And I think when we were there, we did notice, you know, when we were going out partying and things like this, we did notice that there were still drugs around. But I mean, also in Europe, there's still drugs around. So,
of course, yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're often also a bit blind to like these things as someone who is foreign to the place, because a month is a long time, but it's also not enough to actually understand like underlying societal issues, because you only see what you really see or want to see, in a way, because sometimes you just don't get what's happening behind.
And also, we didn't really talk about the drug like before we researched it, because it's just kind of big stereotype or a big something that happened there. And of course, we researched it and I knew about it before we went there. But once we were there, we were really focusing on the informal economy and the current economy and just that aspect. We didn't learn that much more about the drug trade there. We did learn about guerrilla groups kind of pulling in children during COVID mm-hmm. into there. We visited an NGO, War Child. They talked to us a little bit about how COVID-19 and the coronavirus pandemic in general influenced people joining the guerrilla groups in the local, in the small regions. But we were in Bogota. Mm-hmm. You know, we weren't there and we were studying the informal economy. So honestly, I'm not sure. I still would need to read a lot about this topic, talk about it like very mm-hmm. confidently. But we did, for example, go to some museums, and we also visited the monuments and also a historic center that kind of told us like some of the stories of people mm-hmm. In Colombia. But if honestly, that was an initiative that we took upon us, that I wanted mm-hmm. to go visit the National Cemetery, I wanted to go visit the museum, you know, my peers as well, some of them came along. If we didn't, we wouldn't have learned a lot about it, I think. Mostly mm-hmm. just about the informal economy, and that was our main point there. Yeah, I mean, that was our research. And
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really think there's kind of a lack of knowledge about the Latin American continent in general. At least in my like high school education, it didn't really play such a major role. And that's something I really felt when I arrived in Uruguay, and generally mm-hmm. like when I kind of tried to understand the historical context, that I knew so little it was difficult to start anywhere. Because mm-hmm. yes, of course, you know, like some major tendencies and some like maybe overall kind of historical important moments, but not really in-depth understanding, okay, what did this country do and what did that country do mm-hmm. and how are these relations? Which I did learn about most of the European context, but that's also because I like had my education in Europe, right? But I still think there's like a big misconception that then leads to this overgeneralization.
And the best thing to do is to go there. I think yeah. I would have never imagined Colombia like that or Bogota like that if I didn't travel there. It's so difficult. But I think like really going there, you learn so much. I mean, in general, that's traveling in general. But I think for something that's so out of our norm, you know, for me, like Europe and the US was more similar than US and South America, even though it's kind of close as well. It's just not the Western yeah. world. So I think really traveling into these places is the only way to really know. That's another privilege take, but yeah.
Because you can watch documentaries, but you'll not actually be able to understand the full scope
or experience
of it,
things, especially for like a month.
Yeah. And what kind of surprises were like the biggest ones then? Like, because it said like you really hadn't imagined Colombia like that.
See, that's even so hard to explain not being there. You know? It's super hard to like put into words, I think. But just everything we've been talking about.
I think like something that like a moment that really shocked me was when we were in Santa Marta mm-hmm. and it was a lot more poverty than in Bogota. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, more just drunk people on the streets or, I mean, general city things. But we saw a dead dog in the street and it had probably been there for hours. Mm. And if that happened in Maastricht, you know, someone would have called animal control or the police or mm-hmm. something. I don't know. I've never seen something like that before. Just a dead dog lying in the middle of this market in the heat and nobody was doing anything about it. Yeah. I think that's maybe something that was like one moment, you know, but it's really hard to put into words, I think, the like real experience we had. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, that's why a lot of us have connected a lot after these trips, because we were together in this crazy experience for 1 month.
It was very unique.
Mm. And yeah, you were really with them 24/7 and you really bonded. Mm-hmm. I don't know, was that the same for you and your peers?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like one of the experiences I remember that was super surprising, and I don't think I mentioned that in the other episode, was that the more out you go of the city center, like the further you go out, like the infrastructure gets less and less prominent, and like there's less like paved streets, like mm-hmm. properly made streets and like pavements and stuff like that, which you expect as it gets like more out of the urban. But what surprised me is that people use a lot of horses. So generally Uruguay and Argentina both are like very known for people riding horses and people training horses and people like being with horses generally. But in those outskirts, people used horses for like their daily chores. So mm-hmm. there were horse carriages on the streets, which for me is like a very kind of strange image, because I associate horse carriage to like show and like, you know, in this nice park there's a horse carriage and you pay something and then you get like this horse carriage ride. Mm-hmm. So that's how I got to know horse carriages, and not like in a actual life setting where you use the horse carriage to transport goods from A to B, or where you use the horse to like help you move something from there to another point, or where it helps you find something in the trash that you can then sell. So that was really kind of an eye-opener of, okay, this is another person's reality where they use their horse and not a car. while I saw this in the bus, like from the bus, I was looking at the horses and like on the street next to me. So that was really surreal in a way, because that was not something that I had expected in a way.
And if they came to where we live, they would find bikes very weird, you know? I think that's also something important to realize, that, yeah, it's their lived realities.
Yeah.
And not to kind of like impose it as like an exotic kind of thing, because then they look at our stuff and think that about us, you know, about the way we do things.
That's a good point, that you still kind of need to remove yourself from that situation. Yeah. And be like, okay, this is like, I just know so little. Like, yeah, after doing this, I realize I've not seen so much yet, and that this is still like, there's so so many more surprises out there in a way.
Yeah, yeah, of course, a month is like another a huge time span. How was it actually for you, Anthi? Like, did you think that the month that we were there was like long to you? Was it too short?
Way too short. I had the best month of my life, honestly. I loved it. And it went by super quickly, I think. But I think I had a different experience. Like, I remember, I think, on the way home, like, some of us were super happy. Some of us were kind of, okay, that was a great trip, but I'm ready to go home. And some of us were, yeah, so happy to leave. And some of us were really so sad, crying that we were leaving. Aww. So I think, for me, I mean, I would have stayed another 3 months, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was intense at times. I think also just it was a very intense month. I think we went through a lot together as well, going through this experience. And also just in general, with the schedule and the research and all the social aspects, it was an intense month. And being in this kind of foreign country away from everything, because it was kind of, you're really removed from your real life. Because I think if you're on a study abroad for 6 months, you're in a different life, but you still keep in contact with people at home, and you know at the end you're going to go home. But this was where you're like, okay, we're here for a month. We have to make the most of this.
Okay.
We
and
have to go all the time.
It
puts a lot of pressure. And you have to do the research. You have to go to the classes. You have to explore the city. You have to do a weekend trip or two, you know?
Three.
Yeah. I mean, we only did one, you know, because we also wanted, because Bogota is a huge city, I think way bigger than Montevideo. You couldn't see it. We didn't have time. So I think we really were so removed. My family was telling me, like, we haven't heard from you in 3 weeks, you know? But I think it was such a unique experience. And yeah, I had a really great time.
No, I agree with you. Like, that kind of, like, this removal of the daily context is a very good thing that you're bringing up, because it really describes this experience. Because you're right, if I would go somewhere, like, if I'd moved to a foreign place for 6 months, I'd take the first month very slow. I might make sure that I'm settled in, and that, you know, the first week, you know, I'm maybe not so much out and about, but I make sure that I settle in, that my apartment is fixed, that I have my, like, all my contracts, all my new like points. But for that, we didn't really have so much space. So that first initial week that I would take for that was kind of squeezed in 1 day or two.
Yeah.
So then, like, you know,
and have the jet lag.
Yeah. Exactly. While you're jet lagged, have not slept enough, are hungry, and need to make sure that you have a phone contract that works, like a SIM card. And then you, like, are supposed to start right away. So we had, like, 1 day of arrival. And I think that makes it a very unique experience, because in my day-to-day life, if I would move somewhere, I'd give myself way more time. Like, maybe not the entire month, but I'd still, like, maybe not need to travel the first weekend that I'm there, you know, like, I'd not do a weekend trip then, or the second weekend.
I think we arrived in the evening, and the next day we were ready at uni the next morning.
No, we arrived in the morning. We were lucky that the first day was off, but well, we arrived in the morning, and then we had to land, and it passed super quickly, and we were so tired. So then
I always had this feeling that I wasn't doing enough while I was there. And I think maybe that's also unique to me, because I do that a lot as a person. I went on a trip or just in general, like, I always want to be doing something, but I was always worried. Even the first week, I was like, oh, only 3 weeks left, you know? And I really wanted to make the most out of the time there. And I think that would have been completely different if, like, for example, in Maastricht, there's so many things I haven't done here yet, because I just thought I had so much time, you know? I've never been to Bonafanten, for example, you know? I've never been to these things. I should. You know, like, I've never been to these things because you just think you have so much time. You know?
Yeah. That's also, in a way, like, a trap that you can fall into. So I'm also glad I made the most out of it, but it also did add a lot of pressure, and, like, it pushed me. And sometimes I think it would have been nice to have a bit more time to, like, take that pressure away, to actually...
Or to yourself. I don't know. For me, I was with people 24/7. And I'm a pretty social person, so I kind of liked that.
Like,
but at the end of the week, we all hated each other.
The times I was alone was in the bathroom.
Mostly. Yeah. Because we shared a room with 2 others, and you guys shared all together. Right?
With the 10 of us, yeah. So it was really, like, I had my little curtains.
Crazy.
But I learned to deal with it in a way. I had my little headphones for my rain sounds that I kind of blocked everyone out. But it's not the same as, like, being alone.
That is
something I realize I quite like sometimes. Like, I don't need to be alone all the time. And I'm also quite sociable. But
No, sometimes I just sit on the balcony and then you like be in your own presence, and that's sometimes very needed.
And I think everyone on the trip kind of saw like your highs and lows because you were with each other so much 24/7, and it's a very unique experience. Like when you're studying abroad, you don't see your friends every like minute, you know?
No.
But like, this was this one month. It was like we were together all the time. And I think maybe these people know me so well, you know, like better, like really they've seen your highs and lows. Like I got a call from home and some family stuff happened and you know, these people were there, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think it was really a unique experience. And yeah, we're all still friends now. I don't know about you guys. Do you guys?
Yeah, know? Same, yeah. Actually. Yeah. Pretty close. Because you also, even if you don't have, like, if you don't click so well as two different people, but you were just still on that trip, you still get to know the other person, which yeah. I think wouldn't happen in, like, a normal day-to-day situation that if I don't, like, I'm not, to, like, friends with someone or we're not, like, close in any way, we don't really get to know each other. But here we still yeah. did. So there's still a closeness even with people that, like,
we've weren't as close. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I wasn't close friends with everyone on the trip, but...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. you still get to know each other. You see each other every day. Like you say good morning, you say good night. Like there's a, you know what the other person has had for food.
Yeah. Yeah, it's also like about building routines, right? Yeah. Like to have like the same kind of morning, like getting up time, and then in the evening you, I don't know, cook it together or like go eat something together or something. Yeah, for sure. And if you could travel to any other South American country, because I think like you really enjoyed your time, like both of you.
Mm.
So, yeah, and also because we were talking about, like, that not all countries in South America are the same. Yeah. Is there any particular country that you would wish to go to?
I'd love to go to Argentina again. Peru, Chile.
Mm-hmm.
Basically.
Everywhere. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think, honestly, there's so many. I would want to go to Buenos Aires.
Yeah.
I would love to go to Montevideo. Like, honestly, anywhere. Like, but I think I really want to go to Brazil at some point. I don't even know where, just Brazil at some point. And I think Argentina as well.
Yeah.
Buenos Aires. I mean, also from the photos that you guys, I saw, it looked amazing. It looked
Buenos
amazing.
Buenos Aires is really cool.
I think Mexico City also sounds super cool. Yeah. But I think everywhere. I want to travel everywhere.
No, like there's not one country where I'm like, oh, it needs to be that one. But yeah, if I could, I would go back to Buenos Aires for sure.
I would go back to Colombia, you know, and see more of it.
Super cool. So I think that's it for this episode then. Thank you, Anthony and Sophia, for this very lovely conversation today. Dear listener, thank you for checking out this podcast episode by The Master Diplomat. And here's also a quick reminder to check out the episodes 1 and 2 of this series. We have had very interesting insights from all our guest speakers who went to different corners of the world. So thank you so much for listening. And who knows, maybe this series will help you sometime in the future to embrace the challenges and the joys of living in a new country for a while. I hope you feel ready to embark on your next travel adventure. And until then, take care and stay tuned for the new podcast episodes by The Master Diplomat.
The music for this episode was produced by Stone Ocean. This episode was written, recorded, and produced by Leanne Lichtenberger.